Hi, I'm Carrie Butler, and you're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. I have a special offer for my listeners. You can get my new course at carriebutlercoach.com/Broadway Podcast.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Once I played a penny who just couldn't stop the beat. Yes, with roller skates on her feet. Was just recently deceased. A real cool mom, musical version of Tina Fey. Tina Fey, now come with me and fly. I am your host, Miss Carrie Butler. Together, you and I are brave.
Welcome back to Breaking Broadway. It's me, Carrie Butler. I am super excited for our next guest in our director series. I have someone who I actually haven't worked with before because I'm old, and I thought it would be good to have someone with a fresh take on the industry, someone who has a lot of buzz around them. We have Sammy Canold with us, and Sammy was one of the 30 under 30 in Forbes Hollywood and Entertainment list. She's directed Evita at the New York Center Stage. She directed a new documentary, The Show Must Go On, about the survival of the theater during the pandemic. It premiered at Broadway's Majestic Theater and was the associate resident director of Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of 1812 on Broadway, among many other things, but those are the highlights. Sammy, thank you for being here.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. And by the way, you are not old.
Well, thank you. So we usually like to find out about people's journey on the show, and how did you come to become a director? Was it something you always dreamed about as a little kid? Did you go to school for it?
I do fall into that camp of dreaming about it as a little kid. I was very fortunate to be born into a sort of theater, film, TV family. My dad produces film and TV, and my mom produces theater and directs film. And so I was always around it growing up. It was what we talked about at the dinner table. It was like everything that I knew was theater, theater, theater. And so my parents tell me that, like, when I was a little kid, I would put on little shows on the bathroom counter with little shampoo bottles that they'd gotten at hotels and things. It was like very much ingrained in me. And I knew I was very lucky to know what being a director was, because I would spend a lot of time with my mom at work. So I would see directors at their craft understood very early that it was something that I wanted to do. So I had a few little detours, but otherwise it was sort of always the track I was headed on. And I did study theater in school with a concentration in directing. Then
what school did you go to?
I went to Stanford for college.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah. And it's really not people say, where did you go to study directing? It's usually not like in the top 10 places that you talk about. But what was amazing about it was that they have a really robust student theater scene, and the theater department there gives students a lot of opportunities to make things. So we had a 1700 seat proscenium theater that I just got to direct musicals in. And it was wild. And to get to play in a space like that, and with resources like the resources that Stanford has, it was really, I felt very lucky. So I'm grateful.
And did they help you when you get, well, you already had opportunity because your parents probably, but does Stanford help people like who want to be directors when you get out?
Yeah, I think that's, you know, it's something that I'm very, I've been very passionate about since leaving Stanford, partly because it's on the West Coast, it sort of is often like a huge thing for Stanford students to decide that they want to take the leap and go into theater in New York specifically. And there aren't a ton of alumni who have done that. So, sort of building up that community and making sure that current students know that there is like a path, is something that, I'm really passionate about.
Great. Okay. So this podcast, as you know, is for a lot of people who are just starting out. So I would love to know what you look for when you're having auditions.
Ooh, I love thinking about this because I think that to me, every director is different in what they're looking for. And I think that what I'm starting to learn about myself is that what I'm looking for are people who are so uniquely and specifically themselves, in some like special way. And I feel like that can perhaps sound cliche or like, you know, whatever, but I think that like, when I think about the casting decisions that I've made or that I've witnessed that have worked out really well, they are people who are so unique that you can't say there's anybody else like that person.
Right.
And so that's not to say that like lots of people walk around like other people, but just that someone's performance of a role is so singularly theirs, is something that I think a lot about. And I guess for actors, perhaps that's like not the most, actionable guidance because
we talk about that a lot on the show. We say find out what makes you special, mm-hmm. what makes you stand out, and then don't be many times that's the thing that we're afraid of, right because we want to blend in, but we always talk about on the show like find the thing that makes you unique. So for me it was like, you know, being nerdy, and some wouldn't, you know, want to spread to the world, but once I tapped into that, then it's like I found my footing. Right. And so it's like, find the thing that makes you stand out, that makes you different. And a lot of times it's the things that you're afraid of about yourself.
Absolutely. And I think that, I mean, I feel like you're such a beautiful example of that, right? Because if you muted what made you you, I feel like so many of your iconic performances wouldn't be iconic in the way that they are, because they are so uniquely and specifically you. So I think, yeah, but everybody has to go on that journey for themselves, right? Like I feel like I can't tell an actor what makes them
special
until they show
me. Yeah. What are some mistakes you see people make in the room?
Overthinking. I see that a lot. Particularly overthinking in terms of overthinking the interplay between who's behind the table and who's on the other side of the table, less overthinking the performance and more thinking like they need to say something really clever or there needs to be some like really meaningful exchange. Or, I mean, I find this one really funny. And I don't mean this in a pejorative way, because everybody's out there doing their best. But when people come in and they're like, oh my God, I know so-and-so that you worked with. And it's like, yeah, the community is super small. Like we all know each other. I mean, I don't ever like dock anybody points for saying that, obviously, but I just find it really funny because I'm like, well, I know you're trying to like make a connection, but in this case, it's just sort of like, you don't have to try so hard. Like I know we know a lot of people. I can look at your resume and know that.
What do you think makes someone stand out in the room besides what you kind of mentioned before? Is there anything else?
I hate to say this because it is something that really bothers me about the process and something that I'm like conflicted about, but honestly, like preparation, like if it's in the bones of the person auditioning, you can tell, like if it feels comfortable for them, it really makes a huge difference. But again, like I try to sort of on my end, like calibrate for that, because so often I know people are getting sides like, you know, 12 hours before or something. Yes. Crazy.
Yeah.
So we don't always have that luxury, but I will say that like when someone comes in and it is like second nature for them, you're behind the table, your brain automatically can like sort of see them in the role because they aren't holding a piece of paper or you know, something like that.
Yeah, that's a really good point. And that's what I always tell like my students and everything too. I'm just like, the way to get over nerves too is to just over prepare.
Yeah.
Because then it's like, if you're in the room or on stage and you're second guessing, like, am I going to remember the line? Like that should be the least of your concern.
Exactly.
But again, yeah. A lot of times we will get 30 pages the night before. And so there's just no way. I always hold my pages because I like to like remind the people behind the table that it's an audition.
That's smart. Oh, that makes a ton of sense.
Like yeah. Subconsciously, you know?
Yeah. Set clear expectations for what they're seeing. Yeah.
That's yeah. Nice. Yeah. What do you feel about songs when you ask people to, you know, pick a song for auditions? Do you like well-known songs or more obscure? How do you even feel about like overdone songs? Like if somebody came in and sang something like Defying Gravity?
I think that like if people are going to do Defying Gravity or those songs that are like done a ton, it's always, what is that? Mm-hmm. The, like Meadowlark or like, they have to have like a really incredible version. Like because I think that if you do a song that's done a lot and then it's just sort of fine, it doesn't teach me anything, right? Like if there's a rendition of something that is like so uniquely and specifically that actor's, that teaches me a lot more, I think, than hearing a version of Defying Gravity that sounds a lot like one I've heard and feels a lot like what I've heard before. So I guess personally, I would sort of err away from overdone songs. And I also think that like, if like, for example, I was the associate, as you said, on Great Comet, and No One Else, Natasha's song, is like a really common audition song.
Yes.
And now whenever I hear it, I cannot actually evaluate it if I'm on another project. Like I can't evaluate it with a blank slate because I spent years in a room listening to that song, evaluating it for that role. So It's hard to sort of, I think you also have to consider who's behind the table and like what they've worked on, because if it's a show that they've worked on or it's something that they have a relationship to, chances are they're going to have really specific feelings about how it's performed.
That is such a good point.
Yeah. So
yeah, no one's ever said that, but that's so smart. Think about who you're auditioning for. And so you, because you've worked on that song so long, you kind of have a way how you think it should be done.
Absolutely. And also you have like, you start having shortcuts in your brain for it, which is kind of terrible, but like in a song like No One Else or you know, Sonia Alone or anything from Evita or anything that I've like worked on a lot, you know, the note that like, if someone can hit that note, the rest of the song is going to be fine. So you're like, it becomes really formulaic in sort of a sad way. So I don't love when that happens, but I don't fault people for it, obviously, but I have to do a lot of mental math to like take my personal history out of it.
Yeah. And how do you feel about obscure songs?
I'm totally for them.
It like wakes you up a little bit, like, oh, yeah. I haven't heard this before.
Especially when people find those gem songs. I'm trying to think what that, I've heard it so many times, I should know the name of it by now, but the one where it's the girl in 14G.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. I think about it a lot because it's such a strategic audition song because it covers so many genres, like, because then the neighbor sings opera and then the neighbor sings something, you know, so like you get to see the range of a person. And I think, like, if people find audition songs like that, that sort of show range, those are really strategic, I think.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
Yeah.
You mentioned how all directors are different and how directors are looking for different things in the room. And I think it's so important just to remind our listeners of that, like, how you can't, there's no way you can know what this particular director is looking for in the room. So all you can be is like the best you can be, mm-hmm. and just kind of get that out of your head, because you could do the same audition for two different directors and one could love you and the other one could think you're terrible, right?
Absolutely. And honestly, like, there are so many case studies in that, like, even, I mean, I'm actually often in the room with other directors in the sense that, like, I work with choreographers who are directors, or as an associate, I would be in the room with directors that I worked for, or my associate is in the room with me. And so often our opinions are all different. So, like, it just goes to show it's not about you. It's about what's in the director's head and what fit their envisioning.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at suffsmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on S.E. Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
So along with that, all directors kind of, I've noticed, have different processes in creating new shows or working on shows. What is your process like? Like, do you do the table work or do you go straight to blocking?
I'm learning about myself that I am quite physical in the sense that I don't spend a lot of time at the table. I prefer to, like, figure out depth of text, like, while staging, because I think it sort of comes out in repetition. Not to say that we don't, like, talk about the scene before
right
staging it, or, like, you know, I usually, like, read it through once, but then we get on our feet right after. And I pre-block everything, always come into the room with a plan, but often abandon the plan. But it is, like, a way for me to feel like there's somewhere for us to start. And then, you know, we can build and work from there, and actor ideas or, you know, choreographer ideas or whatever, you know, like, we sort of all build on each other from there. But I've tried a few times to go into the room without prep, and I feel very lost.
Yes, I was going to say it helps you not feel lost.
Yeah. So that's, but I know plenty of directors who come in and are like, I don't know what the scene looks like. Let's figure it out.
I know. That's the interesting thing. It really is a completely different room and a different process depending on the director.
Yeah.
Do you have any pet peeves about, like, that process, that rehearsal time?
I think you know pretty quickly when you're working with an actor whether or not they're, like, a yes and person or a no person. And I think that, like, there are definitely a few actors that I worked with, and the majority of actors are not this way, but definitely a few who the sort of default is, like, skepticism towards what they're being given. rather than, okay, I'm going to try what you just asked me to do. And we'll see how it works. Or like, okay, I'm going to try what you asked me to do. And I have this idea of like what I could add on to it. Or like, I'm going to try this, but I have this question about it. But there are a few actors who sort of come into the room with a push-pull to it already. And yeah. I find that very challenging.
I think that's great advice. Yes, and.
And I think part of it also, like, I mean, for actors to think about, part of it is also like the politics of who your director is. Like, I think that happens more to me.
I actually was thinking that without saying it.
Yeah. you know,
a young female director who is this kid telling me what to do. I could see that.
Yeah. And so it conversely, it means a lot, you know, particularly when very seasoned actors come into the room and are like, I'm here, I trust you. What do you want? Like, you
yeah.
know,
yeah.
Not to say that I like need everybody to think all my ideas are great, but I do need people to like at least
respect you,
open to getting on board.
Yeah. And I think, and not to turn this into any kind of like political thing, but I do think women have a harder time in our industry mm-hmm. in general.
I agree.
That's why I'm trying to bring a lot of female directors on my show too, because I'm hoping I do see somewhat of a change. And I hope, I mean, the statistics are like crazy, aren't they? Do you know what they are? Like
awful. It's like,
it's pretty insane.
Really depressing. It's, I think, I mean, the last 2 years who don't measure anything, but
yeah, you can't count. But
prior to that, I think the last season was, 13% of Broadway musicals were directed by women. And it's usually lower than that.
Yeah.
So, you know, yeah,
not great. what about, how do you feel about people? It's kind of a tack on to that last question, asking questions in the room. Like, is there time for questions or is it like open to any time?
I think absolutely. I think it's, about knowing, it's been really about reading the room to me, like as an actor.
Yeah.
Because on most processes, you'll have that one actor who's like the question actor. and I love them dearly. And if it's a luxurious process, that's like totally welcome and okay. Mm-hmm. But for example, like I've done a lot of processes that are like very, very fast, like the City Center Encore processes. And like, if you're a question actor, that process is not for you. you have to answer your own questions.
Yeah, do your homework.
And then like ask a few, you know,
yes.
important questions. But, and I think also it's like, you know, I learned this thing from working for Diane Paulus, where she used to,
I've always wanted to work with her.
She used to do this thing. I don't know if she still does it, but where she would on the like first day of rehearsal give everybody in the company an assignment to do a presentation on who their character is, and there were like,
oh
certain,
my gosh,
yeah, it's great. And there's a worksheet that you get that basically tells you what you need to include in your presentation.
That's so fun.
It was super fun. I mean, like and really what that did, in my opinion, and I've stolen it and done that on a lot of my processes, is gives the ensemble an opportunity to like flesh out who they are. Because
right.
I think that like that's actually where the questions get tricky, right? Because there is time built in to like have a lot of question time with your lead, but a lot of the ensemble character development is sort of left to them.
Yes.
And I think that like that exercise really helped a lot of people to actually like answer a lot of their questions up front, so that they knew who they were, and then could sort of build from there.
Oh, I love that. So would they actually present what they prepared?
Yeah. So basically it was like on Monday we would get this worksheet, and then on like Friday of the first week, everybody would give a presentation. And it was fun. I mean, it's like good bonding. It's like, yeah, everybody gets to show their creativity. I mean, I just remember some of these presentations, people went all out.
I bet.
Yeah.
They're like, this is my chance to shine.
Completely. I mean, I still remember, like, I worked on Finding Neverland, and I will never, ever forget, like, Thane Jasperson was playing the dog. And for his presentation, we were in like New 42. And if you're listening and you don't know it, it has these like big windows that look out on 42nd Street. And he did this presentation where he went out onto 42nd Street with his phone and gave and called the stage manager in the studio, and the stage manager put him on speaker, and he got on hands and knees and was like crawling around 42nd Street as a dog whilst on speakerphone with the whole company. And it was like, but actually it was like, we learned a lot about his character. Anyway, stuff
wow.
like that. Yeah.
That's awesome. I love that.
Yeah.
And you guys, if you don't have a director that, you know, does that fun exercise, that is something you should do on your own. Like before I start shows, I usually write like a 30-page biography on my characters and their relationship to all the people that, you know, that are in the show with them and their childhood, all that stuff, just, you know, to flesh it out.
That's amazing.
Well, you know, I mean, you don't see that stuff on stage, but it makes a big difference to who you are, as an actor. And I don't know, I think like tiny moments then will suddenly come to life because of what you did in your backstory.
Right. Right.
So since you are young and fresh, I am wondering if you have any unconventional ways that you think people can make it now, or the things that I wouldn't know about, I'm sure. Although it's hard with the pandemic,
yeah.
But, what do you see as like good ways for people to break into the business?
I think I would say sort of generally it's about finding your niche, whatever that means for you. Like where I got lucky was that, I found the niche of site-specific musical theater. And like the first few things that I did were, site-specific musicals in a moment where there weren't many.
What does that mean, site-specific musicals?
So like the very first thing I directed in New York was a concert version of Ragtime that was set on Ellis Island. And so it was sort of embracing that site as like this wasn't in New York, but the second sort of professional thing that I did was a production of Violet that was set on a moving bus, because that show takes place on a bus, but is usually performed on a stage. But I did a production of it that was on a bus. And
oh my God. I love that. That's so exciting.
Thank you.
I love when shows are done in like completely different and inventful ways.
It was, I mean, both projects were such a gift, and I think they each in their own way sort of allowed me to quote unquote break in, because they filled a niche that wasn't at that moment being filled, and so got a lot of attention, and then it sort of allowed me to have conversations about what I wanted to do next. So I think I got really lucky there. But when I think about like actors who, you know, break in or whatever, it's usually because they find that niche role that is like so specifically them. And then they just sort of, you know, blow up from there.
Are there any like new theater companies that you love that, you know, we might not know about because they're so small, or regional theaters, or, you know, like Williamstown, kind of places like that?
Yeah,
where you might find people.
You know, one of the other ways in which I got very lucky is that I went to Harvard for grad school, and the ART, which is on Harvard's campus, obviously, you know, in the Broadway community, we know their work from all the things that have, you know, transferred to New York, like, you know, Waitress and Pippin and Porgy and Bess and Great Comet, all of them. But I think one of the things that isn't talked about as much is that there's this like incredible internship program that is mostly for Harvard students, but every year there are a few black sheep like me who like in that internship program, you work on those productions that in many cases are Broadway bound. And so you are working with, you know, incredible professionals at the top of their game and getting to learn from them. And then oftentimes what happens is when the show moves to New York or London or wherever it's going, there are opportunities for those student interns to go with the show. And that was what happened to me on a number of productions. And I'm very grateful for it because it sort of allowed me to take what I was learning in an academic setting and sort of move it into a professional one.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, you have been an amazing guest. Thank you so much for being on the show. Really insightful. Is there anything that you want to plug?
Sure.
I know you've been doing a bunch of workshops and stuff with some of my friends. Like I've heard buzz about like the show Joy and a few other things. I've heard your name thrown around.
Oh, thanks. I've gotten to do a lot of workshops this fall, which was really, I'm especially grateful for, given it's been quite a while since any of us have done anything.
Yes.
But I guess the thing I will plug, if anybody listening to this is on the West Coast, I am about to head to Los Angeles to direct a new play called The Excavation of Mary Anning, which will be at the Wallace in Beverly Hills and open in late February. So if you're around there, please come see it.
Amazing. Thank you. And I hope I get to work with you one day.
Oh my gosh, I would be so honored. What a dream.
Thank you. Thank you, Sammy.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening. If you like this podcast and want more episodes, please take a second to rate it. Check out my website, Carrie Butler Coach, for more info on private coaching and teaching at schools. You can follow me on Instagram, CarrieButler1, and visit bpn.fm/Breaking Broadway for all ways to listen, follow, subscribe, hear past episodes of Breaking Broadway, and find out more information.
Together, you and I are Breaking Broadway.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.